Hey everyone, hey, welcome into this episode of the Art Wonk Podcast. I'm Neville, your host, and today I'm going to be interviewing Katie and Amy Metcalf. Now this is an interview I did at Collaboration, and again, we're talking with these amazingly interesting people who have found their own niche in the New Zealand art scene. Amy and Katie are both very, very clever designers, as well as skilled sculptresses and artisans, but they also work as sisters who have this incredibly dynamic business model that they've evolved. So we sat and talked about that. We've talked about the collaboration experience and how it was seen through their eyes, working very closely together as a very tight-knit pair, and what they were going to be doing with the world after collab as well as before. So settle back, enjoy. This is a really great conversation. In fact, this is the first unedited conversation that I've ever broadcast. It just flowed so well. There was no need. We didn't have any hiccups, no noise issues. It was just nothing. It was great. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Here's the girls. Right. So, hey, welcome in. Who have we got with us now?
Well, I'm Katie.
And I'm Amy.
And together we are two sisters who work in Hawke's Bay in New Zealand, and we form a company called Metal Metcalf. Our maiden name is Metcalf, and when we started this about 3 years ago as an experiment, we realised that our maiden name actually had the word metal in it. So it was obviously meant to be.
Absolutely. That means you're metal workers as well then.
It does, yeah. It does.
Wouldn't it work so well for papermaking?
Not quite, no.
And our main material that we use is 44-gallon drums from the food industry, and I came across them when I was looking for a raw material that was repurposed and already finished. And so, because we're making sculptures and bits and pieces, the raw material is the most expensive part, and so is finishing.
So you're not upcycling, you're actually repurposing.
Correct.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Correct, yeah.
I went past Arataki Honey, where we are in the Hawke's Bay, saw these bright blue drums, drove on in, asked the foreman what happens to these drums and when they get battered and knackered, and he said, well, those ones are free, so I put them in the back of my car and off I went.
You can't get better than free. Stage,
it started from there. So I had a little play. The first experiment worked and made a couple of sculptures.
Okay, so yeah, that's what I was going to say. You had a play being...
Actually it was from lockdown. I made a couple of paper models at home because I couldn't get to my workshop. And I thought they were tiny. They were like about 20 centimetres. And I thought maybe I can scale this up. And so I ended up making a metre-sized prawn. That was my first one out of these Arataki drums. It was my uncooked prawn.
It was a pale blue colour. Yes, that's why it was uncooked.
And then, was it a honey?
That was a honey drum. Yeah,
so it was a honey drums. Prawn as well.
Yeah, well, it was a honey prawn. It was nice. Yeah, I had been marinating.
Yeah.
And then I did a second one and made a cooked prawn out of red drums.
A red drum.
And anyway, those experiments continued. And the opportunity for Katie and I to work together came up, and it was a sculpture exhibition in the Hawke's Bay called Wildflower, and we put my metal making skills and Katie's illustration skills and love of colour together and came up with a mix which seemed to touch a nerve with people. They seemed to respond to it really well.
So how did you get into the metal side, Amy? What was the...
I worked for David Troubridge. I worked in wood for 10 years, and I decided I'd spent enough time working for somebody else and I wanted to go and do my own bits and pieces. And we've always loved the smell of Dad's garage, you know, metal and oils.
Dirty workshop.
It's always been ingrained. Yeah. In us, and I had the opportunity to make a sculpture for my son's school, and I'd never really done much welding myself, but I knew a man who might be able to help me, and I went and saw him, and he said, I'll guide you through it. You can make it, but I'll guide you through it, and pretty much for 5 years, he was my mentor. I was kind of his apprentice and learnt on the job. Oh, cool, so I transitioned.
Somebody like that.
Oh, yeah. So Ross Mackay, who's down in the Hawke's Bay as well.
Big ups, Ross.
Yeah. He's also our next door neighbour in our workshop now.
We still are alongside him, but he... Now with where we're going, I can't say yes to the jobs Ross wants me to do anymore. Oh. I love it. I love working with the material, finding out all the new things you can do with it, and having been here and collaborations.
A little bit of mind blow. Poof.
Unbelievable. They've added so many more strings to our bow. It's unbelievable. So it's been tremendous. So it's just... We go keep finding these places where we can get this raw material. So lots of resources of food processing places in the Hawke's Bay. And we discovered pale blue and pink, yellow, orange, green, a rainbow of colours that you can get these drums in.
And they're quite vibrant colours, aren't they? They're not like they're just dull green. Your earrings right now, I'm looking at them, this is like, whoa, that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, it is. As Amy says, it's a full rainbow. So, you know, from almost primey yellow through to, well, the rarest of rare, which was the pink three drums that we found. And then you get this sort of complete sort of colour grouping of blues, from like the palest of blue to the deepest navy, and same with green. So we're always surprised. And of course those colours also change because some of them have weathered over time. So you play with those, and some of them have got branding, text, logos, addresses from wherever they've come in the world.
Dings.
And they're absolutely, you know, they're not, no, we sometimes get some really almost pristine ones, but most of the time, and what we love about it is they've had a previous life, you know. Yeah. It's very honest material. It shows its scuffs and its scrapes and the fact that it's been dropped by a forklift or, you know.
Yeah. Well, when I first saw your stuff, I assumed it was car. Just because there's that paint quality looked almost automotive, so you know. Yeah.
No, I tried that one. I did try car panels, and all just went up in flames. With the plasma cutter, it didn't like it.
Yeah.
Like
it. No, so often there's anti-rust treatments on the back, and it's not always grand.
So
what about you? How did you come into it, Katie?
Well, I can probably blame my little sister for this because we. In 2020 in New Zealand, we had a lockdown sort of just after Easter, and we were both, as Amy mentioned, doing sort of individual projects because neither of us could leave our homes. And we had this thought that we might actually collaborate for this sculpture exhibition towards the end of the year. And I think that year was quite intense. So we killed that idea and just went, nah, it's too much. And it was only about 4 weeks before the sculpture exhibition that Amy sat down at our kitchen table and said, you know what, I think we should collaborate. And I went, and I was reading a book by a lady called, I want to call her Shona, I think, or Shonda Rhimes, who is CEO of Shondaland, who does a lot of big productions for Netflix. And the name of her book was Yes. And so Amy said, I think we should do this. And so, you know, I'd been reading this book, went, yes, that sounds like a great idea, with only 4 weeks to go, in a material at that point that I had very limited on hands knowledge of. And so we did. We combined Amy's metalworking skills, and she's a great teacher, with my illustrative skills that came from the lockdown project. And we produced about 130 sort of garden stakes, anything from about maybe 60 centimetres tall to about 1.50 metres, something like that. And virtually all of them, I think we came home with six sold. And we were there on the opening night, and everybody was walking around the exhibition, this huge, beautiful garden space, walking around the sculpture exhibition with these big sunflowers in their hands and these big, big smiles. And Amy and I sort of looked at each other and just went, oh, wow, we had no expectation. We did it for the love of playing, basically.
Absolutely. It was it was one big playful moment, and people walking around with these sticks of joy. And we spoke to people, and they were really re-engaged with both with the material, with the story of two sisters working together, The fact that we're females and working in metal, you know, there's lots of the colours. Mm. It just ticked lots of boxes for people in there, and we kind of went, okay, we need to try and take this further. But we thought it was just going to be a kind of maybe one day a week, maybe a couple of days a month, and it's been full time since, you know.
It was an experiment that we, and maybe it's because we went in with no expectations, you know, that actually is just continues to blow our mind, really. And so we did. We kind of duplicated that experiment for a large Christmas market again in Hawke's Bay. I mean, keeping things very achievable, local, you know, keeping them relatively small scale compared to where we are now 3 years on. But we made a similar number of, again, our first product, as we term it, a product, Full Bloom, which were these garden stakes. And the same thing happened, and we were kind of going, okay, the experiment has repeated itself. So again, we were kind of a bit like looking at each other going, ooh. And and then galleries got in contact, and that interest in the material, we then got some commissions that, again, we weren't searching for. We weren't looking for them. And Metal Metcalf, I mean, we talk about this a lot, you know, Metal Metcalf is in many ways all about us, because the name is us, and you know, the colours and our love of colour and playing with the material. And yet she almost has her own momentum and her own pace that Amy and I are like, we just need to try and catch up and keep up with her, because she just keeps surprising us. So, you know, we might have some events in our calendar and go, okay, we've got these exhibitions coming up, all these shows, but we also know that we need to leave a lot of space for these opportunities that just keep on coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. And we find that, you know, we're never short of options as well. There's always lots of things that we can say yes to. You know, and we do try and say yes to as broader breadth of things as possible, you know, because we're still playing, we're still kind of finding which way this is going. And
so the standard line for impromptu is yes, but
yeah.
At some point you start put that in there as well, so yes. I can we'll do it, but have you thought about enough? We go again.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, yeah, indeed. And I think that's one of the joys of being conscious and present within that creative process, is that actually, as Amy says, it's never short of ideas, solutions or options. It's just which one, or maybe two or three, that you try and you play with, and they take you off in completely different trajectories. So,
sure, indeed.
Mm. So I'm intrigued. You had a verbal tick there. You qualified yourself, or we call it product, as if there's something wrong with the word product. Is that because you're dealing more with galleries these days, or this environment's shifted your focus, or how do you, why was that qualifier?
It's a good question, because this is something actually quite recent for us. We have found that there are quite a few retailers who want to stock our, and I'm going to call them generic works now. We've found that there are certain pieces of work that have been actually very successful on a commercial level, shall we say, in terms that lots of people want to buy them. And they're also pieces of work that actually enable us to do larger pieces and do our sort of more kind of hedging our bets on ourselves, you know, and actually investing in larger scale works. So we've started to organise the works that we've created over the last 3 years into what we would term as product. And that's it's a working name, in all honesty, because we haven't actually come up with anything that kind of defines it in our world. And we both come from a design background, I think, you know, we are used to dealing with product, shall we say.
So, you know, as a gallerist, I don't have a problem with product. Mm. If you were an artist who had a job working, I don't know, in a hotel, cleaning, that's a product. It's what you do to support the passion so that you can have the opportunity to do the passion.
Absolutely.
But yet, so many people have this thing, an artist who makes things to sell is somehow sold out. And to me, no, that's a successful artist.
Yeah.
We still brand and we aim for where we want to go emotionally and all the rest.
Yeah.
But you got to eat, got to pay for the materials, got all the gas and stuff that you go through in whatever fashion. Yeah. But do you feel at all pressured to go a particular way by the way people talk about you? Or you're insular enough to be able, you got a good support network.
Well, we have an even better support network now. We've done collaborations.
New family.
We've got a big new family.
We're all coming to stay on Saturday.
You are more than welcome. You are more than welcome.
We don't feel... We know it's something that we want to do and need to do at the moment as well.
Agreed, yeah.
And I don't feel any shame in doing it. I think it's something I think it's so important for people to be able to buy art, to express themselves through. They will connect with an artwork.
Yeah.
You know.
And for a lot of people this may be their very first experience of buying art because it's seen as an accessible thing. It's flower, I understand it. It's metal, I understand it. Yes. I'm not being challenged to deal with a social commentary or anything else.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And once they've got their first one, we've now opened a door. So you're actually a really important part of the cycle.
At that level anyway. Yeah, and it's affordable. I think, you know, the way I think in a very sort of very simplistic way, we've defined product as one of the artworks or works that we make that actually we wholesale. And so I think that's the way that we've kind of just gone. At the moment, we have a range of about 15 products. So these are ones that we wholesale to retailers and to some galleries. Not all work on a consignment or commission basis. And so... that's how we've defined it for the moment. But as we have learned over the last 3 years, it's always changing and it's always evolving. Yeah, it is. And there are certain pieces, certain designs, if you like, that we have evolved. Certainly in the last 3 months, we've evolved some of our products so that they actually, keep up with the other pieces of work that we're producing. And, you ask us the same question again in 12 months, we might have a slightly different answer because it's all, you know, we've grown over the last, you know, the next year.
You do. Yeah. I mean, businesses are living things. It's amazing how often people assume, you know, I've got an idea, I'm going to do it and it's all. But, they're entities. As you said, she's got her own rhythm and her own thing going on. You guys are now part of the ride more than you maybe.
For sure.
Yeah.
For
sometimes
sure.
You just got to hold on. And
we do. we certainly do. We do hold on, but there's opportunities like this where we, at collaborations this week, just where we've just been, the door, you know, has been open, our material we know, but then we've been shown these new methods and techniques and we're just like, oh, possibilities.
And
you know,
for every five you picked up here, there's 500 that we didn't get into this
week. Absolutely.
Yeah. I know. So we're really excited about where that
goes. So you're both creative in your nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you share the design stuff now or have you kind of divided up some of the jobs or just it's collaborative in that you just talk it through?
It's
and
true collaborative.
It's truly. I'm sorry, I'm going to interject here, but over the last week that we've been here at Collaborations, I've been very conscious of the fact that actually decision-making, I will go to Amy and we make a joint decision. I mean, this is something, this communication style has evolved on a working level in a business sense over the last 3 years, but we've obviously had that for a few years more than that, 21, of course,
forever 21.
Absolutely forever 21. And I've been really aware of that, actually, because, you know, we are one of the few pairs, if you like, that are within this wonderful sort of experience. And it's been really lovely because I've been conscious of the fact that I'm going to her to say, what do you think? Or, you know, I'm thinking this or whatever. And you know, if either one of us has a stronger viewpoint and goes, actually, you know what, less is more in this case, or, you know, let's go all out on this one, then we take the stronger viewpoint.
And it can be quite surprising when it comes to these sorts of things too, that I will suggest stuff which is slightly out of my character as well. And I think that comes because there are the two of us and I know I'm supported. So things like we did a Petrikucha down in Hastings. Now, this is not a place where I, you know, standing up in front of people, but I feel comfortable. But I know I'm supported, you know, and therefore I can give it my all and go in and try something new. And I think that's, we both know we've got each other's backs through everything, you know. We have got our defined roles. Katie does lots of social media and beautiful photography, keeps the look of what we're trying to present beautiful and colourful and bold, and I do the exciting accounts and, and those things. So those background bits, you know, which all businesses have, we've definitely got our separate roles, so we're not micromanaging each other. But when it comes into being in the workshop, it's absolutely a joint process the whole way through. And you know, well, there might, you know, if we're making stuff, you know, Katie's delegated to doing the cutting of a particular thing and I might be the welding, and then it will swap over. So we, you know, we do have our roles there, but we can mix and match it up, you know. We're constantly designing, playing. The colour of the drums inform our work a huge amount, depending on what we can find.
Mm-hmm.
Usually are the
seasons must too.
Yeah,
there's something about bright flowers midwinter that everyone's feeling a little bit down.
Winter colour.
Yeah.
And I mean, the botanics are very much a theme for us currently, but it's Katie's absolute love. I'm not green fingered. I admire, you know, what Mother Nature gives us, but it's Katie knows a lot of the more technical parts behind plants and flowers, but
I'm no horticulturalist, but I have a love of a love of flowers and yeah.
But we
I love watching people garden.
Yeah. Oh, no sweat involved. Absolutely.
Sometimes you got to get up and go and get another cold drink.
Yeah, but,
I like that gardening.
Yes. it's fun when we kind of come across an idea, like a work we did last year that's based on the botanics of gin. So we basically created the recipe for gin with all the botanics that go into it, and then created a whole art piece behind that. So this whole idea of making works based around a recipe, I'm a bit of a foodie. I like my food.
You like
And so I get really excited about that, and then we find the colours, and then we work on the design work. So Kelly might do the sketch work, I do then all the CAD work, and then, you know, we get that. The more intricate stuff, we get that laser cut by a third party, and that's all on kind of micro scale. And then we're just, you know, I think coming here, we're just like, we just go all out, we're just a big, you know, immersive installation pieces. I think we can, you know,
you've proven you can tackle anything, really.
Yeah,
I mean, there wasn't any time I saw you shy away from an opportunity in the last week, which is pretty impressive, because this is a hellishly intimidating place to find yourself, even with a support partner along the way.
Well,
it's not normal. I mean, this isn't the way a normal week looks.
Oh. No, it's not. And that's lovely to hear, Neville. So, you know, thank you, because I think we've, you know, this is our first collaboration, so we weren't sure what to expect. We did. I've told this story to a few people, and they've seasoned collaborators. Yes, that would be, yes. You can tell we're a bit tired.
Three hours sleep.
coming to the end of the week, but yes, collaborators, where when we were in Auckland just before coming up here, we went off to an art shop and bought ourselves, you know, each a beautiful sketchbook each, and had visions of the fact that, you know, you might have morning on the beach doing some wonderful sketch work, and
still in its wrapping.
Amy's is still in its wrapping, but I got great satisfaction by putting my name in it, and that's as much as we've done. So, you know, I say that, you know, very with a big smile on my face, because we've tried to individually and collectively, you know, make the most of this opportunity now that we've experienced it. And one of our fellow metal collaborators in the tent, you know, he said it's very difficult to explain this, you know, incredibly difficult to explain it. You actually have to experience it. And really, until you're actually in the space,
yes,
and in this kind of wonderful world, you know, there aren't enough words or words that give it enough depth, really, to explain it.
People tend to end up leading the language more to ecclesiastic type things. You know, you're talking about emotion, you're talking about passion, and it's tricky. I was talking with Henry about this, and the comment came out, it's kind of like approaching an elephant. You see an elephant for the first time and you go off and describe it to somebody else. When they see it, if they see the other end,
totally.
Their description is going to be quite different. It's this big grey thing. Yeah. Did you see the trunk? No. So, you know, if you try and go too far down that line, none of the marketing for collab works that way.
No. Yeah.
Most of us who have been through it realise it's better to tease a little and not try and fill in the, because everyone's, and each time you come is different.
Oh,
so,
that's a good point.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's been incredible to have, in the metal tent, the likes of Henry and Owen and Bill. And
yourself, of course.
Yes. I'd just be incredibly supportive, just giving us jobs, just do it, get on with it, you know, in lovely ways, you know, asking very nicely. But there's just been this incredible atmosphere in that space, and it's just...
It was a bit frenetic this time compared to normal. We normally have a little more space. But we had so many.
We had more people.
Yeah, we had more people and more skills.
Yeah.
Insofar as that the individuals were all making versus having some people who were there just to help, which you know, it shifted around.
Yeah.
And you guys just instantly were, you know, family. It's home. It's like
there was a forge. I was in. Yeah, I had not done that before.
The smile on your face. We will say we could hit her on the side of the head with a shovel right now, and she wouldn't lose that grin.
Well, just like, yeah, she was. So in the drive up here, you know, Amy was like, "There's only one thing I want to do, and that is I want to go into the forge." And you know, that happened on day one, and then you know, you were just, you know, you were just, you know. Yeah, Cheshire Cat kind of thing, really. Yeah. So
it's been incredible. But we equally go into all the different spaces and meet these incredible people who are just so generous with their knowledge and their stories and their comfort and support when it's needed. You know, it's incredible. Ooh.
Did you have a queue of people while you were teaching how to plasma cut? Watching a printmaker come up and she cut a circle and like I think four of you left the ground and jumped in the air. It's just like,
I know.
That's something the boys don't do so much. I don't like the gender separation as a description, but and to see the way you included the teaching was actually far more collective.
Yeah.
Whereas there is a difference. How do you find that for navigating this whole thing? Do you get mansplained all the time when you're going and getting materials for the for
some,
work?
Occasionally
we have.
But, you know, there's a lot of locals, suppliers and bits of me who know us, you know, and we walk in and we're like, hey, Mark, or whoever it is, you know, and they know just to let us get on with it.
Cool.
So, but we still get, you know, when we're showing our works and you say, well, we make these and they're out of 44-gallon drums, and people then kind of go, so do you make them? I'm like, yes. And like, so you weld them? I'm like, yes. You know, and so they kind of like, wow, you know. But there's part of it where I still think it's so important for everybody to see that all these kind of skills are available to everybody. You know?
Well, they come from two hands.
Yes,
one brain, some eyes.
Exactly.
Everything linking. Not important.
It's not important. Yeah. You know, and you know, sometimes there are some moments where, you know, we do need a forklift because we haven't quite got the muscles to move stuff around. But that's what those machines are there for.
Exactly.
And, but no, it's been brilliant here. And to bring that little bit of extra colour, literally with the drums, into the workshop has been great.
You saw how you know, we don't do a lot of adornment. The metal area is often one of the last with the support network for structural stuff. The
bases, stands.
And this time we had a lot of the big I-beams and stuff, so everyone went big because we had them. And they're not done in a fashion or movable enough to take down to the painters and say, hey, would you paint the 6-metre structure for me? So you guys came with colour attached, which was really refreshing. It made that space more dynamic. It seemed there was more fun because of the colour. It's actually primarily pulls on a different part of the body and the mind.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and I think, you know, assuming we're allowed back in 2 years' time... Well,
there will be a probationary patch.
Assuming we've behaved well enough, you know, Amy and I have already said, well, you know, we're gonna have to either source some drums in Auckland, and we've got a guy in Auckland who has delivered and stored drums for us. So we will, you know, we'll just make sure in the run up that we come with more because I think that is, you know, that gives everybody the opportunity to have for us, play is, you know, it's one of the sort of columns or, you know, key sort of
key pillar
for our work. Yeah. And as you so rightly said, I mean, we had people in the tent who just, they were so eager to have a go. And then we had other people who came and experimented and said, you know, you've given me a real problem because now when I go back to the States, I'm going to have to buy one of these because it's just a bit too much like fun. So, you know, and for us, you know, beyond collaboration, or rather not beyond, before collaboration, for us, accessibility and... learning. So whether that is, you know, sort of a slightly more traditional, this is the skill, these are the steps and the methodology behind that sort of technique, or whether that is more the inspirational aspect of education in terms of I can look forward to attaining something like that, they're really important for us in terms of actually our work and our style of working to bring as many people on board and include them. So here we've had that amazing opportunity.
Spades.
Just been full on, hasn't it? Yeah. So that's really important to us, is to bring as many people on and inspire them to have trust in themselves to go, okay, my idea has validity and I can play with it in a material I'd never approached before, or I can play with it in some, even if it's pen and pencil that I haven't touched since I was at school. So I mean, you know, that is, you know, something that lights our fire, really.
It's a cool thing to have, you know, this is, because we're not isolated, we're not islands, we're all connected, and when you can share and get others enthused, it also means it's much harder for people to muck with your flow.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're a person now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, if I had a dollar, you know, I'd like $5 for every bloke that walked through and said, oh, it's just cut steel, I could do that for you, honey, type thing, and dismisses a piece of artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the point over the years where I actually give them an order. Like, mm-hmm. I'll literally quickly go and write down, I want 10 of this, 5 of this, whatever, and if you're going to do it, can you, never have had one show up.
Mm.
But that sort of sense that it's just is amazing, because it's very easy to look at something that's completed and forget that there's a lot of work went into getting there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But once you make yourself available as a person and that's attached to that experience, then they recognise there's actually personality and all these other things in it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, okay, the metal thing's working and the design thing's evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got all sorts of plans. I know some you really can't talk about because that's just the nature of business. But if you were to actually find, I don't know, a spare month just popped up,
mm-hmm.
is there anything that you've seen here in the way of other materials or whatever that you'd go and just go snotty on and see what came from it? Just either for the business or for fun, either way?
I was really – it's funny because I personally didn't actually get to go and work in this space, but Katie did, was with – Kim and Mark up in, you know, the lighting tech area.
Yeah.
And I think...
The brain trust.
I think there is huge potential for what we do to... illumination's one part of it, but to absolutely, like, take it into a whole nother dimension with technology, immersive digital, you know, projections. You know, this. I think there's a whole way of being able to. I'm not quite sure, but you know, take those artworks into another realm. Another, you know, we want to educate kids. We want to take artwork to. You know, I think if you can get art to the kids and then get them really engaged in bits and pieces, I'd love to do that. We'd love to kind of take our work and they can play and just be in a space that's, you know, this dreamy jungle of dripping orchids and tendrils and bits of, I don't know what it is, but I would love to go and actually spend some time with Kim. I had over dinner last night, I actually chatted with him and I was like, I didn't get to you, I'm sorry. But I think there's some really cool stuff there, you know. It's not about a physical product in flower or bits and pieces.
But it's an actually, experience.
It's about experience, and that's what it's key, you know, absolutely key about. And that would allow it to get to so many people.
And given that we actually haven't rehearsed what we're saying, so this is the first time I've heard Amy say this.
Well, I only had the conversation over dinner last night.
But no, but this is, you know, we're thinking in a similar way. I mean, with our botanical collection that we brought to Art in the Park in September last year, those pieces, we kind of, it'd be wonderful if you could walk through these pieces. And so we've talked about scale an enormous amount in terms of, what if we create this kind of Rousseau-inspired Metal Metcalf kind of, you know, landscape that people can walk through. And I think one of the things that this particular art experience that Collaborations has given us is, you know, this is immersive. Yeah. You're thrown in at the deep end and you decide whether you're going to swim or not. And that immersion, I think, provides that element of escapism, both from our daily routines here. And I think when it comes to our work, our artworks, I think going forward, that immersive element where you can escape your daily routines, the things that are going off in your mind, or I must do this, and your to-do list, whatever it is. I think that immersive element. So for me, actually, totally agree with Amy. And then for me, because this is obviously a podcast and not visual, thank goodness, because we're not looking our best after a week. I'd done this big gesture, you know, hand gesture of its scale for me. So actually, you know, it's around actually how we take our pieces and really then we already play with scale, but not on a scale that we've kind of some of the pieces that we've seen this week.
Yeah.
And the confidence that we've gained over this week to go, you know what, we can actually do this. We can do this at 2 meters tall. I mean,
One of the things you actually get out of this is the understanding that the only limits are self-imposed, aren't they?
Totally.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Who would have thought that in just a day and a bit, some of those things, that's how long a lot of them had to be made.
Yes, of course.
Because there's so many pieces being made, none of them got a week.
No.
And yet you look at this and you think that looks so well resolved.
Yeah.
Some of them not so much because there's a lot of personalities coming together in there. But, you know, it does, to me, it always excites because it shows me just how a little bit of enthusiasm and a little bit of knowledge and a little tiny, tiny bit of editing.
Yeah.
And you can go forever. You don't actually have to have a limit.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. And you know, what I've already said to Amy maybe 2 or 3 days in where I was just like, you know, this shows us how much we could achieve in the same amount of hours that we have during a work, in inverted commas, working week, because you don't switch off really. But, I mean, it does show you from an actual using your hands and production and actually making stance, you know, what can be achieved in an incredibly short period of time.
I'm not working till 4 in the
morning. I was just going to say, I give you 6 weeks and you're going to burn yourself so bad.
I wasn't thinking all-nighters, but I think, just the sheer speed at which things get done is just...
Well, again, though, nobody owns any of the ideas. Yeah, like when we put them out there, possessive. It becomes communal.
Yeah.
And as such, everyone can either add or subtract as is necessary to get the job done.
Mm.
As a management style, it's actually a really interesting one. It's a proof positive that the best way to get the best out of people is give them permission to be themselves, a little guidance, and then, you know, really support that. And that's something that is quite rare. And I started after a couple of collabs realising the way I was engaging my suppliers and other people, I was often in the past quite dictatorial. I want X, X, X and X. I want it this way. You know. Instead of saying to them, this is what I'm trying to do.
This is what I
think I need. What would you suggest?
Yeah.
And it turns out there's actually other I didn't know. Yeah. You know.
There's a whole wealth of knowledge that they can share with you.
Yeah, and
you
know. Most want. They want to see us survive and thrive, especially the art community. For some reason, people think, oh, the poor artists, we need to look after them. But generally speaking, people with passion draw others to them because they really admire that. They know the effort. They see it.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So, no, we're really lucky to get to model it here because you can practice things. You can come and be whoever you want as well. It's kind of like you think you're going to hide, but eventually you're dragged out.
There is no chance.
We're all hanging out our laundry next door to one another. You know, it becomes a very intimate experience.
But I did say to Katie, there's something about being in this space where everybody is so beautiful and incredibly attractive, and that in a way that because you are seeing them. There is no facade, there is no mask. I mean, we've all got our stuff going on back home and bits and pieces, but here everybody here is for a purpose to create, to be with other people. And we joked about it. It's almost like speed dating, but you've already made the connection that you actually have got something in common, you know. And you're just like, oh, what do you do? You know, and you know, what material do you work in? And so there's this delightful playfulness that comes with that. But it's just this absolute beauty that I've seen in everybody, and they're just, everybody's got this twinkle in their eye, and when they also see that you're kind of, you know, excited, engaged about something that they've said or kind of had an idea, and like, yeah, let's add that in, or, you know, or you come to an agreement that actually, no, that's leave it as it is, it's good as it, you know. I wish that every person you met on the street was, you know, you were able to be so free and open with them, you know, and know that that's what you're getting back. So it's unique.
It is, and the reality is that most people, this would burn. They would just simply find it too overwhelming. Mm. There is a mindset. It needs a maker's mindset. We've had some come who are really, you know, known to a lot of us as lovely people, but they work in a quite different mental space. Okay. And so, when it's such a cool connection as you've got, and is what keeps us coming back and doing it, is that sense that, wow, what am I going to do to get this buzz again?
Well, we've already been warned that, you know, there might be a period of feeling somewhat low after this,
There's the three-month funk. It's not for 3 months. It's around the three-month mark. There's that sense that there's something really missing because you come off you've got life to catch up on. Then you've got all the ideas that have percolated that come bubbling out, and it's around 3 months before you get back to normal, and then normal seems just a little flatter than it used to. But you have each other, which is quite different. Most of us are in a solitary practice where we suddenly, this is boring.
So we need a three-month Zoom call of everybody, don't we?
Well, and you've got now, what are we, 83 here, potential people to call and ask a question or whatever, and each time you do one, that list grows.
Yeah.
And there's even strangers now that you'll be passed on to when you have a question who are collabers who will instantly, it does sound a little bit almost like some kind of new church thing, but it's, I think, because of the intensity, the trust is boiled out really quickly. We're distilled into something new.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a really good way of putting it.
So the next part, of course, is the goodbyes. That's just like the second.
Oh, don't. I've already welled up. When Rupert left I had no idea he was leaving, and we hadn't even worked together, but in the sort of refectory area when he left, and, you know, he got round of applause twice and, you know, did a bow, and I was just like, oh. So, yeah, the emotional aspect is, uh-huh. you know, we talk about this as a sort of water table. Mm-hmm. So I can feel the water table within me knowing that we've only got 20.
Mine's right at leak point all the time.
Totally. It's really there, you know. And so, yeah, the water table is definitely high. So
I think it's something that everybody knows is coming and we are going to say goodbye, but I'm like, gosh, this is life changing. We have lifetime memories from if we only ever did this week. This, you know, we, like you said, there's 83 other people, you know, who are now family and friends. Mm. And I really look forward to kind of the conversations and possible collaborations from across the world that can happen from here. And when we travel, we can go and see them. Henry's already offered me to, when we go back to the UK to see family, to go and, you know, see him.
When you lay down the countries that I can go to and get a bed, this is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was curious about with your journey through this all is, you know, when we bring our tools and our creative energy, you know, isn't attached to your normal style into a space like this. Mm-hmm. You know, some people recognize it for what it is. Others don't pay so much attention and kind of dismiss it and not see it. Did you feel any trepidation about bearing your core selves in that sense? Did you think that through, or was it just something that evolved?
I thought we had various conversations before coming to CoLab that, you know, did we have projects that we wanted to, you know, initiate? And we actually, between the two of us, kind of just ricocheted, you know, between there's all of these things we could do to we shouldn't actually go with anything, you know. And we kind of ricocheted, and that really came down to how confident we were feeling on the day, you know, and going, no, we'll go with nothing. We'll see what happens to, I've got this long list, because as creatives, the list is always long. You know, we just don't have enough time in the day to fulfill all of the things that we would love to. But no, I think we kind of, certainly from my perspective, you know, sort of just jumped into that space. And I think for me, just loved observing how others worked and the styles that they had.
The rhythm's amazing. Some wander in at 3 p.m, you've no idea where they've been, and then they just binge late.
Yeah.
Others, it's like 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there, they're everywhere.
Absolutely. And there were moments, and I think, you know, being first CoLab, there were moments where I thought, I should be in the metal tent. And then I was like, no, I shouldn't. I'm here at Glassblowing, or no, I shouldn't. I'm here with Mark and Kim in the tech space, or I'm over with Helen in print, you know. So, I think, you know, I learned probably day 3 or 4 that actually, no, this is all good. It actually doesn't matter where you are and what you're doing. And for me, my background is fashion and textiles originally. So just the opportunity of going into print was just like, oh, this is so nice. and walking, although I spoke with Ray Wren quite a lot, but, you know, I didn't actually work a lot with the textiles or fibre side, but actually just, again, being in that space, because, again, each zone or each marquee has completely different feel and completely different atmosphere. And, you know, so if you want something that's a slightly calmer, not so noisy, you might go into textiles and fibre. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
No, and for me, I mean, I felt we came in with, you know, our MIG and our plasma cutter and a few hand tools, you know, we lugged them up in the back of the car. I hoped that people would come to us and go, you know, can you help me? Can you do this? But equally, knowing that we've got the likes of all the other guys within the metal workshop that use those tools as well, but they've got their own techniques, and I can observe that. So I always know that there's opportunities, even though I'm doing something, to learn how to do those processes better, you know, or in a different way, or you know. So I think we've learned to we're very proud of what we do, you know.
Oh, you should be, yeah.
And where we are, we still know there's a lot to learn and lots to do. But I think we still feel very not cocky, but we're confident with where we are. But equally very open to people telling us, hey, have you thought about doing it this way? Or, you know, have you used this particular tool? Or and I've picked up lots of that. So, I've been very comfortable coming in with our current skill set. But there's things I'm just like, I want to go home and hone. Oh. I want to hone some, you know, and I haven't TIGged and like welded in like, I don't know, 18 months.
Yeah.
Whatever. Because and then just watching some of the guys, and I'm just like, I want to get back into that.
freedom and having that skill ready to go whenever you want it.
Yeah, inspired. But I think also for us, you know, probably our primary, and we should ensure them, primary tool is our hands. And what I learned very early on from both yourself, Neville, but also from Bill, was, you know, the actual manufacture and making of tools. And I mean, we've done that in a sort of small way in our workshop, but I was like, yeah, we could have a whole library of tools that actually provide us with a means by which we can create similar forms, so there's some consistency and look to pieces. And I was like, I'm excited about, you know, creating these tools that actually will help us and elevate our work, both in scale and potentially for some pieces in volume, if we want to do this, you know, this large cascading kind of plant that, you know, that is coming off a wall or through a window or, you know, over,
or, you know, or it might be more critters and stuff like that, because we've learned how. I mean, I even Bill's got some beautiful nylon hammers that he's custom made. So I traced around the shape of those. So when I go home, I'm going to go and get myself some nylon, and I'm going to cut out some hammers and some formers, and and I'm really excited about playing with that, and then sending some pictures to Bill and going, look what we're doing. Look what you showed us how to do this, and look where we're going with it. So that sort of thing of just knowing that these people, although there'll be projects in the future where they haven't themselves done something physical on it, but they have given me the skill set to do it, and they that is collaboration, you know, for me. You
absolutely. Know, and when we were writing, you know, so with each art piece, you have to write, you write all the contributors to the piece, and, you know, we Amy and I have spoken about this, and I was like, as far as I'm concerned, any form of consultancy. So if I've gone and spoke to Helen in print and said, this is what I'm looking for, what do you think, you know, where should I go for that? And she goes, not here, you need to go and talk to textiles, or you need to go and, as far as I'm concerned, she's helped within that project, so she gets listed on that project. Oh, wow. She hasn't lifted her hand, but her creative consultation and what is it that you're looking for, you need to go there, you know, listed. And so it could mean that actually every project that either Amy or I have initiated actually has 83 participants. but I think that is, you know, just thinking about the daffodil, Bill didn't actually contribute in a physical sense to the making of the golden daffodil piece, but he's on there because without that knowledge of that particular technique, it would never have been made.
To us and said, have you tried doing this with that?
I think it would be really good for you.
Oh, yeah. And it worked.
It was perfect.
Perfect.
It really is interesting. The chin scratching, we call it. Mm-hmm. You'll get a group of people standing there doing, I'm not sure, but, you know, and that stance. You can see it from a distance, you know, that there's some kind of critiquing happening.
Yeah. Yeah,
Bill's got the longest chin attachment.
Yeah, absolutely.
The longest critique. Yes, absolutely.
It's quite an impressive beard, isn't it?
It's not bad. Yeah, and especially when it needs to be tucked in.
Yeah, and plaited. And he was telling me about his special mask that he wears that he made because he's got the beard. It's a snorkel with a filter on the and the end of it. Like he's got a snorkel with it. Yeah, and because he's got this.
The beard.
Yeah, so he breathes in through the mouth and out through the nose. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Ingenious.
And again, that's just another form of creativity just allowed to have space to percolate.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
So of all of the things you've seen, is there any one that you want to add now to your repertoire for fun or for not so, I'm not so much worried about the business side, but like say the felting fascinated Henry. He's a blacksmith who just thought this the way she did that felt.
He said it's amazing.
Yeah, and so, you know, we've all seen something new. I watched a woodworker doing an amazing job of steam bending the timber.
Michael.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's sitting across from me before you guys came in. 53 years he's been doing this for a living, and he's absolutely fizzing. He said, I can't wait to get home and make stuff. I'm just, he travels the world, goes to cultures that are isolated and helps them build their industry up for making stuff. Lots of amazing experiences.
Yeah.
And he found this was like the ultimate unique thing because it empowered him.
Yeah.
So now I've been talking all through what children are around. So.
Well, I think for me, and the probably unexpected, was glass blowing. And, you know, serendipity, I don't know, but I was there for the whole day. And I got the opportunity to both observe Justin and Sean and Elizabeth, but Justin and Sean were really, you know, that partnership of them dancing and really whilst they're making, and various things are being thrown at them, not literally, but in terms of, oh, I'd like this, I'd like but this.
Wouldn't it
I'd
be
like
fun
this.
Though to have glass blowing with apple throwing?
Absolutely. I think, you know, and dodging them, but it was like a dance watching them, and that really, I hadn't ever spent really any time within that kind of space. And what I've seen from other artworks where that glass has been combined with other materials, that excites me. And I don't know where that's going to go. I don't know what that, but...
A trip to Whanganui and...
Oh, well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, go to New Zealand Glassworks. I think, you know, there's lots and lots of things there that I, you know, will just fizz in the background. So, yeah, that's the one that probably from a fun and excitement because you've got no idea what's going to come out of that one.
And Justin is an amazing guy, but an extraordinarily good blower as well, isn't he?
Oh, it was just... I think... What I loved watching about them, which I kind of made some correlation between Amy and I, is that they know, from a professional perspective, they know each other very well. So they're already intuitively knowing what the next step is. That is knowing your craft, but is also knowing the style in which the other person works. And they're just at the moment that it's needed, but also, you know, always actually collaborating through discussion, or should we do this, should we do that, whilst they're still moving around with, you know, glass, molten glass, you know, whatever temperature it is. Yes. Absolutely. And so that for me, I loved seeing that relationship between the two of them. But the material, I was like, again, it's a colour thing for me, but it's also the alchemy, the sort of the kind of magical aspect, you know. Well, even with the skill set that they had, they were, I don't know if this can work. You know, we're gonna have a go. So I don't know what yours was.
Stepping into the lack of knowledge is really fun to watch, isn't it? Instead of stepping away, straight in. It's like, let's go.
I mean, it does come out. My want was to play in the forge, and I would love to do it a bit more. Last night I think we started on these legs for Benoit's piece. I don't know what time it was, but one that went through till 4 a.m.
So Henry started forging that at around, I think he said, 11 a.m.
Okay, so
and it took him till 4 a.m. the next day to get it finished. That's an intense amount of hot, hard work.
It was. There was some serious hot works, and it was lovely to feel that I was included in that space. I was included in that dance for a little bit. I mean, even towards the end, I was merely, you know, Henry was giving me the torch just to hold away while he was smacking.
That's a trust thing. He knew he could reach it. You weren't going to burn him. You weren't going to hang on the wrong end. You know, it's a team.
It was, but yeah. I felt very comfortable because I started to see exactly what colour the metal was when he would give it to me. So I knew, it got to the point, because it happened maybe 20 times, I knew when he was going to hand it to me. So I went into position and just, you know, so that for me, I felt very comfortable, and it was just great to make metal glowing and sparkly and then smash it with a hammer, you know, and make these incredible things. And without Henry's guidance wouldn't have been possible. But to watch him and Erwin And as Henry calls it, he does his blacksmith Tai Chi, where he's kind of metals in the forge and he's moving his hands, got his eyes closed, and he's kind of slightly muttering under as he's trying to work out which way he needs to bend it and where it's going to sit. And
that's not true. He's a grand wizard, and I'm sure there's alchemy going on.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, incredible to watch, and I feel very privileged to be part of that and be trusted on that small part in the wee hours to make that last piece happen.
We've all three of us used the term the dance or the rhythm, and each space has kind of a dance or a rhythm, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And watching the way people move around each other.
Yeah,
I've noticed guys very often we develop a. I don't know whether it's growing up in an environment where not so much bullying is common, but just when testosterone kicks in your early teens, there's a lot of posturing that goes on. Mm-hmm. So you learn to read a threat by the way somebody positions themselves. So when we move things, very often we're used to reading another bloke, you know, he's twisting this way and I'm going to go that way automatically to either be sympathetic to his movement or against it, whichever your option is.
Yeah.
The comparison really is a lot of the women, sorry for making it about gender, but a lot of the women seem to have a more intrinsic sense of rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're moving something heavy together, we're great. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to moving ourselves in space, we often look quite awkward. and in that space, somebody like Henry's Tai Chi is a really different thing. Again, it's somewhere between, it's not as fluid, but it's definitely about something else.
Absolutely.
And finding that rhythm in a room is like, I fit.
Absolutely. I felt that. So I would very much love to continue in some way. I'm not quite sure how that looks, and have more playing.
Well, the biggest mistake any of them can make is show us how to turn a machine on, because from then on we can go home, get one, and we know how to start it. We'll work out the rest later.
I think that's it. You know, you just get on with it and you just play.
Exactly.
You know, and
And you don't need a forge, but if you got your hands on
one.
Well, I can make one. Yes, exactly. And you do, by the way, need a forge.
Okay. Yeah,
everyone needs a forge.
I can just see our landlord kind of raising an eyebrow to that. So we'll have to get cross that bridge. It's all good. I think we just need to make it happen,
Stick some flowers on the outside of it.
We'd never know. I'll never know.
But all of a sudden, instead of having a simple rod, you're going to have a tapered rod.
Yes.
You'll get koru forms that have an elegance, and it can only add, but it adds work and time.
Yeah, no,
for sure.
Yeah. Hey, look, I've stolen a lot of your time, and thank you so much for stepping away. It's been really cool.
Thank you, Neville.
We've loved spending time with you.
Yes, this has been cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, that was so much fun. Isn't it lovely when you have these vibrant people who are just genuinely excited by what they do? So if you'd like to actually contact the girls, you can actually find them at metalmetcalf.com. That's their website, which has a great range of what they have to offer and a bit of their story. They're also on Facebook and Instagram under Metal Metcalf. And if you want to actually reach out to them for any reason, they're available at metalmetcalf@gmail.com. So thanks very much, girls. That was terrific. We'll see you all again soon. Happy creating.